My guest today on this Roundhouse Making Space podcast is the multi-award-winning actor, writer and producer Daniel Kaluuya, who is also Associate Artistic Director of the Roundhouse. He grew up in Camden, where he took part in Roundhouse creative projects as a teenager. Today, he is world famous, of course, and there's even a statue of him in Leicester Square. In 2021, Time magazine put him in the 100 most influential in the world. Last few years, we've created Centre 59 together, a new youth theatre programme and company. Daniel, thank you for joining us this morning, and I think it's 7 o'clock evening for you. So we're across the continent on the other side of the world, but we're together in spirit.
I know. Appreciate that. Thanks for having me.
No, it's brilliant. So for 20 years, you've been at the forefront of contemporary culture, comedy, horror, political thriller, from Skins to Judas and the Black Messiah. When growing up in Camden, taking part in youth projects, in your mind, were you living in the present, or was there always something in you that was feeling, one day, I'm going to be at the very top of Hollywood?
I was living in the present. I always was like, I'm not here to act, to just act. I can just act if I act. I'm here to be successful. Like, I want to be successful. And success is just however you define success is. And how I defined it is, like, I want this to be my career. I want to earn a living doing what I love to do. So it was just more about, like, I just love what I do and I want to keep doing that. I don't think I had the temperament to do a job I didn't love, if I'm being honest, for a living at that age. And I was just kind of like blissfully the kind of like stubborn. So I was just like, I really love this. I really want to do this. But I never thought of Hollywood. I thought about, like, I remember when I got the audition for The Bill, that was amazing. I remember I celebrated the call to my mum. Like, that was like my world. Do you know what I'm saying? Like getting a audition for The Bill was like wicked. But it wasn't like, I don't know, it's just that kind of pathway wasn't available like that in the same way, like being Hollywood or LA or America. But then I did start having experiences that opened my perspective and point of view. So then that probably did start shaping it.
So you mentioned your mum. Your mum's really important to you. And I know you said just then that you phoned her when you got the part in The Bill.
Not the part, just the audition.
Oh, just the audition.
I didn't even get it.
Oh, really?
I didn't get it. I just got an audition. I was like, Mum, I got an audition for The Bill. It's sick. I couldn't get the part.
So you talked about your mum, and in your Oscar acceptance speech, you talked about your mum. Was your mum that special person who encouraged you, who encouraged your imagination, your creativity, and your participation in the arts?
I think she was wise enough to like listen to other people when they said he should go that way. And she didn't control. She just put me in like youth classes. But it's also like childcare, if we're being honest. I mean, it's convenient in half term and breaks and some holidays. It's like, cool, where's it going to go? Like, scouts stopped, got too old for scouts. So you start following your interests. I think like football wasn't, I knew I wasn't going to make it by 11. Boxing, she didn't want me to do. It was just something to do. It was like something to do. It was just like, go do that. And I think the encouragement was just believing that I believed in it. I think she was in tune with that. She didn't try and like do this, do that. She's just like, if you're going to do this, get a regular income, like get something regular at it, go at it, like do give your all. And she asked me, like, she did like put like drama school posters in my house, in our flat, to like kind of signal like, yo, this is the way you should go. But she encouraged in her own way. She did leave me. And that is sometimes a good way of encouraging, to kind of like, yeah, you do it, you figure it out. And then I came back. Probably like 16, she saw me act, and I'd been active for 3 years since then. And she hadn't seen me act in between that time. So she just left me alone and let me do it. It's just my like after school club, like what I was doing. Yeah, and then I was like, yeah, I want to do this seriously. But then I started getting jobs, so it was like a dream. There was actually physical things that were coming from it, you know what I mean, from my like borderline obsession about it.
And had there been actors or people working in the arts in your family before you?
No, nobody.
Was there a role model of, you know, something like Anna Scher? You took part in Anna Scher's school, but also worked in, you know, took part in the Roundhouse and Weekend Arts College and many other places. Was there somebody who went, oh, yeah, I'm going to take him under my wing?
I would say Roy Williams is a pivotal person, because he was doing youth playwriting courses in primary schools in Camden. I think a lot of it is because, yeah, I'm like, I've got talent and yada, 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 all that kind of stuff. But I was in Camden and it's an arty borough. And so you could have a playwriting course available to you at 9 years old. And then he was doing it with Jonathan Siddle. And then I won that competition. Then I knew I could write. And I knew when I was at Scouts, I got a writing badge. I remember they gave me a writing badge. And it was a whole special thing that I was writing to play during that time when I was nine. It was in a local paper and stuff. And so I knew it was a thing in that sense. So it's that. And then like, and then to Jonathan Siddle. And then I think Evelyn Duar, who runs Centre 59 now, she was a teacher at Anna Shea. I think she gave me real talk. She gave me real talk and would say, and I messed about a lot. And she was just like, listen, that like, you can do it. And I think no one said that in my life, that I could do something. You know what I mean? So she, and there was a teacher at WAC that said that too, that was like, you know what, Daniel, you have the ability to actually do it. She pulled me to the side and said, you can go for it. You can have a career out of this. And I think those kind of conversations really helped. I think there was another person, Holly Hughes. She was in the youth division at Hampshire Theatre, Heat and Light Theatre Company. And then she just believed in me. And she was like, yo, keep writing. And she would like send me to plays. And she got me into like Royal Court Young Writers Program. I did that at like 17. And then I did two classes and I was like, bro, I got A-levels. I can't write a play in a week, bro. You're nuts. But she would encourage me and like kind of was like, no, keep writing, keep writing. And then she was the one put me forward for Skins on the writer's room and stuff like that. So there was those kind of people were pivotal people at that time that were like saying, yeah, you can do it.
But the world has changed, hasn't it, since then? There's very few opportunities around the country. We've seen huge cuts to creative projects or arts subjects in schools. We've seen a massive cutting back of funding for the arts. Even, you know, talk about how we're devolving our imaginations to AI. Why do you think there has been such significant cuts? Or even, I might even be a bit more brutal, which is there a rising up, do you think, against creativity or the imagination or the arts? Is there a fear about it?
I don't think it's a fear about it. I think it's an indifference. I don't see is that there's something they're doing that's against the arts. I just think that they just don't find, they don't believe it's valuable in terms of what their aims are. If you look at the history of Britain, I feel like we was in a golden time post-World War II and like the country got bombed. So they needed people to come in and help and rebuild the country. And after that rebuild happened, which is kind of like, I'm presuming like Thatcher's era and stuff like that, then it's like, all right, cool, start the privatization. That started, you know what I mean? And then because of privatization, there was prospering. Then that's Tony Blair's Britain. Things can only get better. I was my earliest memories. Things can only get better. So we were told things can only get better. All right, cool. Then fuck it, let's go for it. Then like by the time I became a teenager, things weren't getting better. Things weren't getting better. And I think that like, because things are going how they was in Dickens' era, pre-World Wars, which is what Britain is. You know what I mean? It's like, super rich, super poor. And in that regard, there's no space for art. So it's just that kind of, I just don't think they think of art. I think it's giving them too much credit if they go, they're doing this against us. They're not doing, I think it's more harmful than that. They are not thinking of us. They're not valuing us. They're not prioritizing us. Because I don't think we're prioritizing ourselves. Like, I don't like the British mentality of like, oh, woe is me, this is happening to me. No, fuck that, man. What are we doing about it? If it's really socialism, what are we doing about it? Why are we delegating agency and mobility to people that don't live our lives and have our values? We wouldn't even do that in our families. You wouldn't tell your flipping uncle to do something that if he doesn't have your politics or doesn't have your way of thinking to run your life and dictate it, you'd be like, no, I'll take control. And I think that's the whole thing of Centre 59 and what we're doing is just like, what are we doing about it? What are we going to do about it? How are we going to do what we're going to do? Like, and I think that's why I'm going off and doing my thing. And I know so you need to capitalize to socialize, really. And so then like, all right, cool. Like, what am I? Okay, I'll do that. And I'll do what I want to do with my time, which is, I think, is the most valuable commodity, and share it and try and put institutions and infrastructures in place. But I think if we're waiting for the institution to build our institutions, why would they do that? I think we have to genuinely ask a question to ourselves on the side going, why would these people do that for us, and actually have an answer? Because I think we're beating ourselves up thinking that they would, but they wouldn't. If I was them, I wouldn't.
Well, you remind me of the great educationalist, arts educationalist, Sir Ken Robinson, who, you know, I used to know him really well, and he was involved in the Roundhouse. And one day he said, how are you going to do that project? So I was talking about setting up this building that I'm sitting in now called Roundhouse Works with the Centre for Creative Entrepreneurs to do exactly what you're talking about. It's trying to give people agency and energy and direction. And I said, well, I'm just going to get on with it. And he said, yeah, don't wait for a government. Don't wait for anyone else. Just get on and do it. And, you know, I think that that's a really clear message that you're giving, which is, come on, it's down to you, what you do. And that comes back to the conversation that we had a few years ago, which was, I think you phoned me up trying to get a car parking space for WizKid. Yes. And I said,
WizKid, yeah.
And I said, actually, Daniel, have you got a couple of minutes? And you said, I've got 2 minutes. And I think we're still on the phone an hour later. And I think by that time we'd kind of stitched up a youth theatre company, didn't know what it'd be called, that you would be associate artistic director of the Roundhouse, get involved in who we are, what we're doing. But let's go back a couple of steps. What is Centre 59? What do you hope to achieve? What are the skills that you want young people to learn? And what do you hope it'll mean to them and to us as an organisation in, say, 3-5 years' time?
I want Centre 59 to be like a home for nurturing and growing an expression of artists in the performing arts. It's kind of like a summation for all my experiences going to all these youth classes and drama classes around North London and Northwest London, like in my time. And also, yeah, seeing that a lot of them are not, they don't exist, or they don't exist in the same form. And then thinking that, like, what am I going to do about it? Like, what am I on? And then, like, my career popped. So I was kind of like, and then so when we had that conversation, I was like, yeah, I want to do this though. And I did think that it made sense, because I think you guys do that. Like, and you was kind of explaining how much you guys do that. I think the most valuable thing I learned on my journey from like 13 to like 19, when I was in every, like, running around doing all that kind of stuff, is that, like, I really got in tune with my inner voice and hearing my intuition. And, like, knowing what to right thing to do, what right not thing to do. And that is from, like, doing improvisations and doing that kind of stuff. And it was so empowering, like, organisations like Anishare and Hampstead Light Theatre and stuff at Roundhouse and WAC. Like, it was about, like, you do it. You write it. You make it. You devise it. You figure it out. And then I think there was one course I did at Heat and Light Theatre Company that was really impacting me, when they were, like, they were just like, who wants to do, there was like, we've got a production, like, who wants to write us? I put my hand up. Who wants to write? I put my hand up. I was, obviously everyone was acting in it. And then people were like, who do you want to do costume design? And someone else put their hand up. So who wants to do lighting? Who wants to? And it's just, you just followed your interests. I mean, yeah, the acting is the gateway, but it's actually like, man, you could do this, you could do that, you could do all these other things. And maybe you want to do press, maybe like PR and liaise with that. Maybe you want to do music. Maybe you want to do in terms of like scores, and maybe you want to do like lighting or costume design, or you want to like a hand in the actual, how do you make something that doesn't exist exist? And knowing and understanding all that part of that process, and also finishing, which is what an amazing thing you guys do with doing the 360 festival, is giving a space so that they can perform to a paid audience, and that they come in and then they actually go, they feel the actual experience of what it's like to be a professional actor. It's not just they're learning things in theory. They're learning things, they're learning how to, their ideas, they're executing their ideas, and obviously in show one, like, oh, that didn't work. Why didn't that work? Remember, show one's not the only show. You can refine it. Do some work. Figure out in show two. Oh, it's kind of getting there. Maybe show three, it gets there. Maybe in the last show, it gets there. Maybe it doesn't. You know what I mean? But it's that kind of, you do the process. It's the course that I wish I had when I was younger. Like, that I wish I, like, was a part of. And that, like, even in term one, a lot of the young people are asking, like, Daniel, what do we do now? What do we do now? And I'm like, bro, like, I don't know. You figure out, you know what I mean? It's like, you got each other now. Like, go off and do stuff. Some of them have already made a play that was in Highbury. Like, it's like, yo, let's kick on. Like, the people that are really about it will kick on. You can't hold hands. You're like, we go, yo, this is how you do it. Go on, replicate it, run with it. You know what I mean? And so that's what the course is about. It's about, like, empowering young people, them showing us what they can do, and then finishing. And then when you finish and complete, there's wisdom there. And so even that, at the end of the course, there's I think it's the biggest lesson.
And that hand-holding bit, it's really interesting because do you think in society we've maybe mollycoddled too much in the education process and not given enough time for kids to be messy, to explore, to experiment, to take their own journeys, to risk a bit? And maybe risk is a really important thing that we've taken out of society.
Yeah, I think that it's so kind of like, if you don't get this grade, you have failed. I think it hasn't created a healthy culture of failure, and how actually you learn way more from failure, more about yourself than you do from success. And so then, yeah, I do think that, like, I don't know, I just never understood that, like, just waiting up for people. Like, that just sounds all mad to me. Like, if you're waiting for someone, why should you get it then?
Yeah,
like, I'm real, like, Marcus. I'm like kind of going like, why is someone going to pay you a big fee to work for 20, 25, 30 years if you're just waiting to be picked? What's going on? And that's what they teach you, but why did you believe it? I think the issue is about a lack of critical thinking as well, that is not encouraged. So it's just like, not only, the thing is, yeah, you can be told something, but does it sit right with you? You mean?
You've taken me absolutely to the place I'd hope you're going to get us to. Critical thinking. There's lots of different sorts of creativity and imagination. What do you think the imagination is, and how do you think we can nurture it?
Okay, that's a big question. Can I say again? What do I think imagination is in general?
Yeah, what do you think? Where does it come from, and how do we develop it? And, you know, it's the most powerful thing that we have as humans, isn't it? Isn't it the starting point of how we became, you know, the species that we are? We imagined something different to the existence that we had at that moment. We weren't just sitting there or in a field eating grass like a sheep. We imagined something different. We imagined language. We imagined painting a picture on a wall, you know, 70,000 years ago. We imagined something. Where did that come from? How did that happen? You know, I feel a lack of imagination sometimes. And I think you just talked about in terms of critical thinking. And I'll come back to this thing around AI, we're almost devolving our imaginations or our creativity to AI. And I think we're at a crossroads, are we, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think imagination is rooted in, I think we are taught or kind of been conditioned to think in answers as opposed to thinking questions. I don't think it's something that you can conjure. I think it's something that you find. And I think that it's like you go to places and you go, what's going on there? What's that? Why is that happening? What's going on? Why is that? Why? Like, I think my whole career is just like, why? Why would I do that? Like, why? Like, oh, yeah, you're this. Like, why? 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 Oh, like, oh, you know, Daniel, you know, black actors aren't in, I mean, now it's changed, but black actors, I remember there was a big thing, black actors not in Downton Abbey. Why do you think I'd want to be in it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, what's going on there? You mean it's like, do I not have agency? Do I not have an opinion of what? It's just like, what? Like, when you just continue to ask, I think imagination is just a bunch of question marks. So you go into kind of spaces and then you go like, what's this? What's and then you go, oh, cool. And then you find things. I don't think you're something that you create. I think you can, like, take the credit and say that, but I think you find things that are already there. It's just no one looked there. It's like finding the bud of your headphone underneath the drawer. No one looked, so it's there. So then you find, oh, look, it's a bud. Look, I found it. That's how I see imagination and creativity. It's like kids look in places that you're not looking because they've got an imaginary friend. My niece finds so much stuff in my house that I don't know because she's just looking. I am not as flexible in my mind to go and look for places. I'm probably inflexible in other ways in creativity. And I think it's about the flexibility of thought and and going, all right, cool, what's over there? Like, what? Why is that? Why is that? What's this and what's that? And then you're a detective as opposed to a creator. I think you could be an executor. I think you could be a maker. And I think there's an art form and there's a skill and create. I think there's things that you Marcus, can find that I could never find because of your experiences, because I don't know what songs your mum listened to when you was younger, whatever. And a lot of imagination, a lot of creation is just putting two random things together and go, oh shit, that works. So I try not to see it as like magical. It can be seen as magical, or maybe what I'm describing is magical. I don't know. I don't see it that way. I just see it as like, I want to hit the bullseye on targets that others can't see.
I think you're talking about imagination being the root of our humanity in some ways, that we taught ourselves to ask questions where nobody else, no other animals were asking questions in the same way. And then we kept on doing it until it developed our brains. And there's the answer to that. Oh, we can do that in that way. We don't have to live in a field. We can actually build a house, you know, that kind of thing. And if we devolve too much of our questions or answers to AI, what does that mean to us?
Yeah, I think what we're talking about is like, I think imagination is the maturation of curiosity. So it's like, oh, wow, if you're curious, oh, look at this, look at that. And I think what AI could do is dull your curiosity. If you allow it to, though, again, agency. How the fuck are you going to let a machine tell you what to do? Like, it's like kind of, we're just kind of, oh my God, it's going to take over. Like, we're in Terminator 2. Bruv, like, it's like, yo, you could just turn it off. I use sat-nav everywhere when I'm driving. I used to memorize numbers. I know I could do all that. I know there's dull the level of memory or whatever. I'm very blessed because of my job. I get to, like, cultivate and practice that muscle of memory. But, like, sometimes it's more convenient to just, like, oh, I'll put it in there, da-da-da. But you do that route a couple of times, you remember. You may not know the street names, but you start remembering. And so, I don't know. I think it could dull your curiosity, yes. But I do think as humans, we're a resistant bunch. And I do think that there could be revolt. I'm not necessarily, I don't think like from what I'm hearing, like the younger generation are like on social media as much as we think they would be, being born in that era when they don't even know it exists. You mean they're outside to a level, you mean? So I think there'll be negative things that come from AI and there'll be positive things. I think there's a possibility that it could create jobs.
Yeah, I agree.
It's a real possibility.
I think the human spirit will invent, and we'll keep inventing and creating and imagining.
Yeah, because you need a human. You need humans to curate and like direct and like kind of like cultivate and kind of harness this technological advancement. It's just a technological advancement. Like, it's like saying like, oh, the internet's going to like, oh, we're not going to go to libraries. I think that's the equivalent. Oh, there's no libraries going to be closed down because the internet exists. And it didn't. I think we're just not looking at history and going, what are these equivalent things that have happened? Did we survive? I remember the same thing when I was 19, 20. It was like 3D cinema or 3D cinema. And I remember I said to someone, I said, I don't want to see Fish Tank in 3D. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, I want to see Fish Tank. I don't want to see it in 3D. Like, it's like there's things that you're not going to want to see. You're going to want to see as cinema.
Well, that didn't last, like, did it?
Yeah, and cinema started and it could have killed theatre. It hasn't.
Hasn't.
So it's like, I think that like things will be okay. I think things are just changing and evolving. There will be casualties because like any advancements, there are casualties, but there will be progress and building as a product of advancement. You know what I mean?
I want to get back into talk about writing. You actually mentioned Terminator 2, which is a great movie, I think. I remember Terminator Classic. 1 and Terminator 2 had a profound impact on me because it was imagining a future I'd not imagined. So it's, again, but somebody being curious enough to imagine something that was an alternative or something in the future. You're writing. You wrote The Kitchen recently and co-directed, which was an imagination about the future. Do you have to be in a certain state to write? Because, you know, you do so many different things. You're producing, you're working with young people, you're acting, and this thing called writing. Do you have to kind of have 10 cups of coffee, or do you do it just you're falling to sleep, or is there a ritual you do around it, or is it just in the back of the van when you get a moment?
Depends. I'm trying to create a process now. I'm trying not to do too much every day and try to just keep writing a little bit every day. But it's because my life is so, I've accepted my life is different in terms of it's like, I don't know where I'm going to be in May. I don't know where I'm going to be in July. So there's a level of like, I try and factor in time when I'm in one place for a period of time and try and like clear time where there's a run of time where I can fail and kind of go, all right, cool. And all right, cool. That didn't work. Okay. What did work? And then by like end of or middle of week two, you're like, oh, cool, I think I understand the rhythm in this space. And then I kick on. Because I'm doing so much. But also another thing is accepting that, like, I'm better when I talk. I think when I talk, and it's accepting that. And so sometimes I find it really alien to be on a laptop and just type, unless I've had a conversation, unless I've exercised the idea. I think the writing for me is just a documenting of the ideas that have been fleshed out through dialogue. So I make sure I have collaborators that are quite frankly better than me, that I can bounce off ideas and stuff like that, and then like kind of build things in that sort of way. So that's what it is. It's kind of factoring time that I can like talk my ideas through and go through it. Because I think what takes me 8 hours to put on the page will take me 20 minutes if I have a conversation.
Wow.
So even in efficiency, it's just, I think the minute I say it out loud, when it's in front of someone, I course correct the idea. You mean you course correct because you're like, oh shit, someone's looking at you. Like, you know, this would make more sense. And then it just happens. While like that process takes a long time locking in.
Does that go back to your actor training, which is, you know, you're in front of a room, you're saying words, and then you're learning so much from the audience reaction. Do you think you're verbalizing, or is that your imagination? I've seen you watching a show and I can see you're concentrating, like you're burning through what's going on stage. I've never seen anyone concentrate so hard. It's like your mind is thinking all the time, isn't it? You know, you're trying to work out what's happening, who's doing what and what feedback.
Yeah, you're trying to marry your feelings with your mind and just trying to kind of understand what's going on. And then, yeah, when you understand, then you could just open your mouth. Like, that's really how I see it. But then it does come from my improvisation background. And me doing from 13 to 16 at Anishere, just all improv. So that's all thinking on your feet. That's all working out the idea, like working out characters, working out scenes, in dialogue, in conversation, in this. So I think that has been my cadence of like actualizing an idea. That's like my mother tongue, essentially. Like, so that's helped.
I want to ask a question about, you've got a really busy brain and you're a really busy person. And I've seen you in action. And I'd tell one little story before I ask the question, which is during one of the Centre 59 shows, yeah, I saw you watching, and you're watching the show, and at the end, you were saying some nice words to the whole company, and then you went round each person without anybody noticing this, and you just had a very quiet word in each person's ear. And I asked you, I said, what's going on? He said, I'm just giving you a little feedback. You had noticed every single person. And the next show, the level of performance had risen like a thousandfold. It's something about the generosity of your spirit which kind of went into every single person. It was a beautiful thing to see, and I don't think anyone else noticed it because it was a really kind of mad moment, everyone kind of running around. But with a busy brain and a busy life and lots of expectations on you from yourself and from others, what happens when you close your eyes?
I go to sleep. But what time of day? When am I closing my eyes? What am I doing?
Yeah, well, if you were to say at midday, you just sat there, closed your eyes, what would be happening in your brain? What's going on? Can you calm it? Or is it a relentless kind of churning out of thoughts and ideas? And
yeah, it'd be like, oh no, God, I didn't text that person back. Oh God, I've got to do that. And goes, oh, whoa, there's that thing there. It's just like when I close my eyes, I kind of notice everything. Essentially, I'm able to notice. So then I go, oh, cool, there's that. Oh, there's that or that. Or then things that are like are back can come to forth. So there's a lot of, I've got a unique life in that sense. There's a lot of different things in a lot of different cities. And so I think, yeah, when I close my eyes, I notice what I haven't been noticing.
And you're also producing work now. Is this about taking control of your own destiny, deciding what work you want to do rather than responding to other scripts? You know, you must get sent thousands of scripts all the time, but is this about you sort of going, actually, I want to make that work? Because that, to me, is really important. It's kind of making the road in front of you.
No, I think I've always wanted to produce since I was 19. I did. We did. Like when we was doing YouTube sketches and stuff like that, we was producing it. We was making it. Like, we was putting our money up. Like getting the locations, getting the cast, getting a sound guy, getting this, finding a suite to like for someone to like help edit us at the end of their turn. And when they were editing something else, we were like doing it. And I wanted to make things people that I liked. So then I've got a position. I want to just continue that. And I think obviously when I that experience of Skins, I just saw making, as well as being in it, I saw the making of it. And I'm like, cool. I remember I would see Brian Owsley, I remember I wrote first draft of Skins. Yeah, first episode that I wrote. And then I thought it was like, yeah, I did it. Like, I gave you a treatment and then I did it. And then, like, he gave me notes and he changed the order or something. I'm like, whoa, you just blew my mind. I never saw it like that. Oh, whoa. Like, and I was just like, I want to do that. I never forget that I was 18 and I was like, what he just did, I want to know how to do that. About a script and a story. I don't know what he did to my... He just made something that I thought was made sense way better by changing things. And I don't know what he knows. So I think it's just that kind of... I've always aspired... I love story. I love structure. So I've always... I think a lot of those roles that I've got is because I look at scripts as a writer. I don't look at scripts as an actor. So then, like, I go, all right, cool. So then that because of that, having the writing school and the acting school, then you do, that does equate to producing because actors are so lucky, we're so blessed because we've been on so many sets, you know what I mean? So we've seen so many different processes, so many different experiences. If you're blessed enough to have a career and regularly working. So then like, it's that kind of going, yeah, it is about taking control, but also I've got stuff I want to say, stuff I want to do. Like, why am I just listening to this person? Like, who's this person? I just met this person on earth and he says, oh yeah, do that. And I'll do it, but I want to do stuff too. They just decided they want to do stuff. So I want to do stuff too. What makes them more than me? I don't think I'm more than them.
You once told me that storytelling is everything. Everything else around it is all about making the story happen. Do you have a new story that you're writing that you hope to be the next thing that you produce, make?
Yeah, I do, but I can't say.
I thought I was going to get something out of you then that you just slip in, you're in Australia, you're pre-production, you kind of just accidentally let go of that one. So it's worth a try.
I always do. It's kicking off now. It's kicking off. So it's like I've done the amount of studying that I've wanted to do in this period of not acting. And like I wanted to like study and learn and grow and understand my craft and understand all the elements that I wanted to understand. And then now I'm like, all right, cool. I know what I want to say. I know what I want to say it. So it's all kicking off really.
So I'm just going to come to awards for a minute. I mean, you've got two BAFTAs, an Oscar, a Golden Globe. I mean, you've got a statue, as I said earlier, a statue of you in Leicester Square. I mean,
that's kind of mad, that
is mad, isn't it? It's great. Okay. Apart from the statue, do you have a special room in your house just for the awards? And or is it, what do they mean to you, really? Do they mean just a door opening to the future, or is it something more than that?
They're just in the house. They're in the house. Like, they're just there, like, family, home, and that. Like, I don't really have them at my places because I just think they would make me complacent. I don't know, it's kind of like a photo album.
Yeah.
Like that marked that time. I remember when I got that, I remember what that experience was. But you know what it is, Marcus, that like I can't not feel the cost of it. Like, I mean, there's a cost when you do something, do anything. It's like, it's never as rosy as the award. So then it's like, I'll be like, oh, that's it. That's sick. I got awarded, I got recognised. It's lovely to be recognised for what you do. Like anyone, like it's human to want to be recognised. And it's just that I don't see it as like, oh, it's all, sometimes there's a sacrifice that you have to make. And it's not like a negative one. It's like, it's just a cost in progress. So I kind of just see the time that it represents the time in totality. I just think like awards, it's cool. It's cool. It's cool. It's cool. Some of them look really cool.
Well, congratulations on all of it, and you really do deserve it. And the
Thank you, man.
I think there was one Roman emperor or somebody like Cicero who had a slave walk behind him saying, you're just a man, you're just a man, you're just a man, you're just a man, to remind him that actually today is another day and you just get on with the job that's in hand. But to
funny that you've got a slave to ask him that and to tell him
yeah,
that.
Yeah, 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 exactly. It is, absolutely.
But it is, Marcus, I genuinely believe in humility, bro. I believe no man's above me and I'm above no man, no woman's above me, I'm above no woman. And I just think that, like, I think that's accurate. I don't even think that's like a belief. I think that's just an accurate way of life. And I think in your profession, you could be above people because of the amount of hours you've done or the amount of access you have or the amount of, you mean? There's difference in that. I mean, in like in sport and whatever, because it's a game. It's like you can't say that you run a building for a certain amount of years. Someone that's run a building for 2 years, they ain't at your level. You know what I mean? Just because nature the beast. But I just think that like, as a person, like, yeah, I'm still a man. Like, I'm still a guy. Like, I just... I think it's very, I've had to work very hard to remind myself of that.
For those of us who know you, you are really humble. I love the way that you just go and chat to anybody at the Roundhouse, talk to the guys on security, on the finance team, and your interest, you have questions. And it's you know, that curiosity coming back is the root of humanity, isn't it? That you kind of taking an interest in another person. Now, I've got some quick fire questions for you, if that's all right.
Yeah, go on.
What advice do you have for a young theatre maker now? Maybe something around an audition advice or anything else?
Audition advice, off book. Be off book. It will take an hour more, but that could change your life. That hour could change your life.
Okay. What was your first job?
Work experience. I was at Barclays Bank in Camden High Street.
Did you have to wear a suit?
I had to wear a suit, yeah. Marks and Spencer's, finest. It was next to the Foot Locker.
I know exactly where that is, yeah.
100%. Yeah, I didn't like it. I think that was when I realised I need to do acting.
Who's your favourite writer?
George Orwell.
Favourite actor? Far from yourself.
Denzel Washington.
Yeah, fantastic. I agree. Absolutely amazing. If you were Prime Minister of the United Kingdom one day, what would you do for the arts?
Create a institution of funding and nurturing that leads to producing global talent, global level talent that can't be picked apart or defunded for in perpetuity. So then by the time I'm gone, you can't do anything about it.
So, Daniel, when you're Prime Minister, can I work on that with you? Would that be all right?
Yeah, you could. I don't think it'd be wise to be Prime Minister. I'm too opinionated to be Prime Minister. That would be nuts. But you guess, you can. Yes, please, I would ask you. I'd ask you, I need help.
Oh, well, you know, I'm waiting for the call. Would you prefer to be a footballer? I know you love Arsenal, and they're doing pretty well, right? Are they going to win? Are they going to win?
Come on, man. I'm going to keep it very, 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 very cordial until May. I'm not going to say anything. We're doing well. We're taking every game as it goes. That's all I know. I'm being very cautious with my tongue.
Wise choice. Okay, it's the Roundhouse's 20th anniversary since we reopened on the 1st of June 2006. We're doing a number of different things, including this podcast, amongst some other things like an exhibition, a festival. What advice would you have for my successor, who's come in on the 1st of June, for the next 20 years?
Be limitless with your dreams and visions for it. It's incomparable to any building in the world. So to put it against others and to use it as a metric for any other is inaccurate. And also, it is about community. So how do you feed the community that exists and grow that community that wants to be welcomed in?
I'm sure Jenny Mollica, my success, will be listening to this. And I think that's a great piece of advice. Now, my last question, we shouldn't measure our lives by the number of breaths we take. We should measure it by the number of times our breath is taken away. When was the last time your breath was taken away?
I saw a Dior Couture show on YouTube. I think it was J.W. Anderson's first one. And I thought that was fucking amazing. It was just like, wow, man. I didn't even know you could think like that. I thought it was just so beautiful. As an artistic expression, I think what he did in that was really, really special. Like, I think it was his first one. So, like, I'm new to this. I'm not really like, but I went to a couple of fashion shows like a couple of years ago, and I was like I don't really get the fashion thing. And then I was like, oh no, but as a performance art piece, this is actually incredible. You know what I mean? Like, it's like a play. And so D.A.W. Simon's first couture show was, I was like, wow, this is beautiful. It's actually beautiful.
I'm sure you'll be dressed by...
The Dior one.
I'm sure you'll be dressed by Dior next time I'm speaking to you after this podcast, of course. But
make sure you put that clip in the within selling it, and then we get Dior to post it and then get out of there, and then hopefully I can get like dressed and stuff. Yeah. No, Dior's been, they're cool peoples. But I just think, I was like, right, you're actually mad talented. Like, you're wow, like you, whoa, this is pretty amazing. So yeah, I think that was the last time. I don't think what else. That was it.
Daniel, it's been a huge pleasure talking to you today. And thank you so much. You're just about to start filming. You have done so much with me and the Roundhouse, and I can't thank you enough. I mean, it's been a joy to know that you took part in projects with the Roundhouse amongst many other places when you were a kid, that you're championing us. You're involved. You're deeply immersed in the work that we do. I'm leaving here on the 1st of June after 27 years. It's our 20th anniversary on that date. And I hope for many years to come, you'll be centre of the Roundhouse and I will be watching and listening as an audience member in the future, which will be a great joy for me.
Well, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for you thinking in innovative ways and like opening the doors and actually genuinely wanting to build and actually backing it up. You know what I mean? Because a lot of people just talk a lot of wess. you actually said, yeah, all right, cool. I believe in what my dream of what I want and what we could do, and our values are aligned. And it was testament to what you've built and the work that you've done. So, like, I mean, if I could be here as long as you, I'd be very blessed. If you guys would have me, but I'm just happy to be here now, and I'm happy that you have welcomed me in. And we've done the work that we've done already, and I'm looking forward to doing more. And I know you're going to be involved, Marcus.
Man. Oh, yeah, come on, too,
you're
right.
You're going to be all right. You're not just a participant like that. Come on, bro.
So, actor, writer, producer, future Prime Minister, Daniel Kaluuya, thank you very much indeed for making space with me today. Thank you.
All right, wicked. All right, appreciate that.